We have been speaking of purification. We spoke of the purification of the lower instrumentation, antakkarana, spoke of the purification of life desire, emotions, and we arrived at a stage last time when we are considering the purification of buddhi, the intelligent will, will which presides over the mental movements. And this purification of buddhi consists of two phases. One is of detachment. Anything that is posed before the buddhi, before the mental intelligence, the mind first detaches itself. It does not identify itself immediately, but takes care to what mother calls step back for a second, for a moment, step back and detach itself. Having detached itself, it fronts the object with a certain equality, not with like, not with dislike, not with repulsion, not with attraction, but a certain equality, waiting for the right reaction to come. So this process of building up a spontaneous action of detachment and equality leads to a practical purification of the buddhi. But these things are not done in a day. We have to analyze the nature of buddhi, the functionings of buddhi, and know in what precise way these steps of purification are to be applied. If we consider normally the operations of our, let us call it mental intelligence, we see that there is a movement or a type of activity which is habitual. Anything that comes by, it responds in a mechanical way, governed by the environmental traditions, habitual reactions, habitual thoughts, and so on. You can even predict precisely in what way the buddhi is going to react to a particular situation, based upon past experience, based upon what happens elsewhere in the environment, the mind reacts. That you can call the habitual movement. The second is, there is a certain bias in the buddhi, what we may call a pragmatic intellectuality. As each thing comes before it, it evaluates that thing from the point of view of how far is it going to be of use to itself, whether to arrive at a knowledge that it is seeking, or to derive a certain delight, or whatever it is, a personal self-reference, and its assessment of the object will depend upon the pragmatic value that object has from its viewpoint. And here it is more the will rather than the thought element that is prominent, because it is the will that is concerned over the possible use or the utilization of a situation for its, in its own interest. Thought is usually concerned with the pursuit of knowledge for its own sake, but not so the will. Then there is a third gradation, third level of functioning, and that is, the buddhi seeks truth for its own sake. It is not influenced by its own needs. It is not swayed by the existing habitual impressions or samskaras or trends. It is out to seek knowledge for its own sake, and it brings a certain objectivity. And here it is the element of knowledge that is prominent. Thus, there are three successive levels in the functioning of buddhi: the habitual level, mechanical; the level of pragmatic intellect, dominated by the will; and still higher, the pursuit of self-existent truth, dominated by knowledge. Now, these three elements we have to analyze, understand, and then apply our process of purification on their respective levels. We spoke of the element of will dominating in one grade, the element of knowledge in another. This disparity between knowledge and will is, as we have observed on a number of occasions before, a characteristic feature of our mental ignorance. Where there is will, there is not enough knowledge to guide it. Where there is knowledge, the necessary will is lacking to effectuate the knowledge into practice. This gulf between knowledge and will is healed only on the higher levels, and it reaches a perfect identity in the Gnostic level, in the level of the supermind. Till then, there is a constant variation in the contributions of these two factors. After we analyze the way these components of the functionings of buddhi and start disciplining it, we find that though the buddhi itself is constituted of knowledge and will, it never works at its optimum or in its purity. It is always in search of truth. It is never in possession of truth. To be in possession of truth is the sign of knowledge, knowledge mind. But at the level of the buddhi of which we are speaking, there is only a quest for knowledge. Knowledge is not in its possession. And if we succeed in silencing the buddhi, in eliminating its restless movements and dartings after sense objects and other feelings and entities which excite its interest, still we find that buddhi can only reflect. But even in reflection of the knowledge that is above, as it is constituted, it reflects only in parts. Ours is not an integral or a total buddhi. It functions, or it is alive in some parts here and there. Some segments are obscure, some segments are not functioning. So, the knowledge or whatever it is that is reflected in the mirror of our buddhi is a partial reflection. Reflections are piecemeal, and even in interpreting the reflections, there is always the pragmatic pull. Subconsciously, even if we are not conscious and honestly believe that we are objective, there is always the subconscious bias, the subconscious pull to interpret a thing, to understand a thing from the point of view of its possible utility in some sphere or other. Granted that we process our mental intelligence on these lines, make of it as perfect an instrument as possible at our level, in our circumstances, still we suffer from two main limitations, and that is, whatever realization the mental intelligence has, it is after all a mental realization. It does not organize itself spontaneously or automatically in the rest of the being. It is at the level of intelligence that we realize certain things, that we know all is Brahman, thou art Brahman, all these. But does it translate itself in our action, in our vision, in our dealings with people? It does not. The mind knows, certainly the enlightened Buddhi knows that all life is one, that God is everywhere, all are equal in the self, all that. But it is a mental realization. That is what Mother means, that learning, book knowledge, knowledge learned from others, these are all acquisitions. They are storehouses of information. But unless it becomes part of your consciousness and it molds your consciousness in the direction in which the truth points, it is not true knowledge. It is not true realization. We speak of transformation, we speak of supermind, we speak of Gnostic communities, we deliver lectures, we write. But do these concepts form actual part of our day-to-day life? And as long as they do not, they are mere theories for us. We have studied theories of Euclid and algebraical formulas and all that, Einstein's theory, like that. But they do not make a bit of a difference in our life. We say these are practical things and these are philosophical things. Now this is the legacy of the old world ignorance. And one who is serious about arriving at a certain working purification of the Buddhi must understand that the realizations of Buddhi, understandings of Buddhi, even when it is purified, is largely a mental realization. Even when it is in a position, by discipline, by brilliance, by training, to catch hold of a number of truths, not to lose itself in one truth, but understand many truths, many aspects of a thing, it lacks the genius, it lacks the capacity to organize, to unify the truths. This again, the unification of truths can come only in the Gnostic level. Till then, there will always be a stress on one truth at the expense of another, depending upon the trend of nature, depending upon the ideal one seeks. But the entire coordination of knowledge and will and a complete unification of truths as a multiple expression of one reality, these are possible and become a regular feature of life only at the Gnostic level, when one realizes the supramental consciousness. The ancients, when they discovered these constitutional incapacities of buddhi to communicate the real spiritual experience and relate it to life, they decided in many of their philosophies that the best thing is to cultivate the buddhi, teach it detachment, enforce certain equality upon it, and then pressurize it to escape into a higher being, to turn its eyes away from the world and grow towards the heights, look upwards and escape into the realms of the higher consciousness. But this is only a way of shirking the problem. Certainly mental intelligence is not given so that it may be fused or it may disappear into certain higher realms of consciousness. It has to be raised to its optimum, it has to be placed in its proper perspective and transformed, enlightened into an effective force or an effective power or a projection of the Gnostic buddhi, Gnostic intelligence. The kind of liberation that a seeker of the integral path should envisage is not to force the buddhi, a mental intelligence, to disappear into the higher mind, but to lift the soul from the mental level to the higher levels leading to the Gnosis. Normally, the soul of man, a mental being, is poised in the mentality. From there it has to be educated, lifted up gradually to higher levels. It does not mean that these levels, lower levels, are to be abandoned for all time. They have to be cultivated, the link has to be maintained. But still, the direction should be upwards, with a constant turning back to integrate the levels that have been left behind. And the soul, so lifted up from the mental levels, passes through the illumined mental levels or the intuitive levels, and it has to naturalize the action of these two higher states of consciousness before it can hope to obtain a permanent lodging in the Gnosis. For all that, a comprehensive purification, as we have seen, is indispensable. Sri Aurobindo puts it pithily, saying, Shuddhi is indispensable for Mukti. And this emphasis of Shuddhi, once the lower instrumentation has been subjected to a certain operation of purificatory processes, is to shift the emphasis on the liberation of the soul. But liberation of the soul is not extinction of the soul.